Okay, Parsha Shmos is upon us, and of course with Parsha Shmos we introduce Chumash Shmos, where Bnei Yisrael go back and down to the land of Egypt. They go down to Mitzrayim with 70 people, and then they become very, very large. The Pasuk tells us to Bnei Yisrael, Paru, Vayishitzu, Vayirbu, Vayatzmu, Bima'od, Ma'od, they grow multiple times over. As Rashi cites, it's Shisha, Bekeres, Echad, six at one time. But why is it called Bima'od, Ma'od? In a lot. Why not Ma'od Ma'od? Rav Ovadia Yosef Secher Tzadik Livracha explains that the first way that the people grew was financial. Financial from the language of Bechom Me'odecha. Ma'od sometimes referred to finances. It was because of that wealth that the Egyptians despised the Jews. And so they first decided to tax them to death. And so therefore, when the Jews couldn't afford it any further, then they wound up becoming enslaved to the Egyptians. Maybe this is why, suggests Rav Ovadia, that the Egyptians were paid back with 10 makos. Aser can also be from Isur, from Osher, the same way like we say, Aser, Bishvil, Shetis Asher. Wealth causes a lot of damage in Judaism. So then the Torah tells us that Paro turns around and he says, Havan es chakmalo, let us outthink them. And the Haggadah refers to this within the context of Vayareu osanu ha-mitzrim, that the Mitzrim were bad to us, or onto us. Rav Shach Zatzal notes that it doesn't say that the Mitzrim, Vayareu lanu ha-mitzrim, that the Mitzrim were bad to us, but rather, Vayareu osanu, they made us into bad people, which teaches us that the Jews themselves got infected with the Egyptian style. So Rav Shach explains that this was possible not because of a particular event, but rather due to being steeped in the general culture. And so, Rav Shach suggests that the antidote to this problem is the need to constantly be aware of the tendency towards assimilation and to label the attempts in order not to succumb to them or to be grossly aware of the attempts. Point them out so we do not become subjected to them. And so the Shibud began. Vayimaru eschayehem ba'avodah kasho b'chomer o'vilvenim. The Egyptians enslaved Bnei Yisrael, and then the Torah goes back and says, "Vayavidu Mitzrayim es Bnei Yisrael b'parech." Why is it that we keep repeating the parech twice? So Rav Nosson Gestetner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the great author of the Horos Nosson, cites Tosis and Sotan Yad Aleph Amud Aleph, who explains that the work was done for naught, that it was b'parech, it was a lot of backbreaking work, but it was useless backbreaking work. And not only was it useless, it was sought out for the Jew. In other words, the only purpose was to make the Jewish life miserable. It was a lot of physical exertion. It was purposeless. Unless, of course, we assume that the primary purpose was befarech, was to make the Jewish life miserable. And then the issue got a little bit more intense. Because Paro made a gezerah, kol abena yilod hayorat hashlichu v'chor bas techayun, that Paro declared that all the male children born should be cast into the Yor, while the daughters shall live. Now, earlier when he spoke to the Mialdos, he made a deal, kol abena yilod, in benhu v'amitenoso, that if the males would be born, you should kill them, and Basi Vachaya, she should be allowed to live. The Rabbi Liam points out the national hypocrisy in the attentions of Paro. First, Paro doesn't announce a genocide. He hires the group of midwives to do the dirty work for him. And then, only when this failed, he needed to sanction murder as a state policy. But once again, Paro limits himself to baby boys, in order to note that it wasn't limited to the Jews, but rather it was part of a national cult. So Rabbi Lam notes that most of the story doesn't speak to the average Egyptian when assessing blame, because it wasn't he who tried to deny it. That message is true throughout history as well. We often whitewash the desire of the authoritative government, which doesn't actually bloody its own hands with the destruction of the Jewish people, and we should. But again, Rav Nosson Gestetner Zatzal notes the difference between the two positions in regard to the daughters. When he speaks to the midwives, he tells them that she should be allowed to live. And yet when he speaks to the Egyptian policy is b'chol abas techayun. And Reb Nosson Gestetner points out the difference between b'chaya and techayun by noting that he would kill the boys outright, but when it came to the females, he would put them on governmental programs in order to feed them techayun with bishulei akum and other things that are metamtei mesalev, which in the end would damage the souls of the Jewish girls, which in turn would destroy the Jewish nation any way that it couldn't be done. So whichever way we look at it, we see the treacherous nature of the intention of Paro. Vayehi bayamim harabim ahem, the Pasuk tells us that as time went on, the king of Egypt died. Vayamas melech Mitzrayim vayahu b'nei Yisrael amin avodah vayizaku, and the Jewish people cried, Vatal shavasam mim halokim min ha'avodah, and those cries went to Hashem as a result of the work. So Rabbi Per, the Rosh Hashiva and Yeshiva Farakwe, would often quote his father, Rabbi Nachum Per Zecher Tzadok Livracha, who would note that initially the people would think that the slavery was the result of the king, and that once the king died, so would the slavery. But that wasn't to be the case. It was only thereafter, when the people saw that their simple explanation failed, that they cried and they set their sights heavenward. Rabbi Per, the Rosh Hashiva, Shlita, adds that this was the challenge that Moshe asks of Hashem when he says, well, Ve'amruli Mashmo, when they ask me, when I appear in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what am I supposed to say to him? Rabbi Per explained that people were confused, for Hashem is always in the background for the Avos, and Moshe wanted to know how to bring the message that he would be in the forefront for them, in the forefront of their minds. That was the confusion. So then Moshe says, look, Moshe meets HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the snare, and Moshe makes the declaration to Hashem that, look, hein lo yaminu li, B'nai Yisrael aren't going to listen to me. And Rabbi Shechter Shalita would often point out to us that there was a dual nature to the power of the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. That we need to understand that one part of the Nevuah was the overing power of prophecy of Horashah, of the needs of the moment. This power needs the signs that all Nevi'im need to bring in order to prove their right to prophesize. The Nevuah of Halacha that Moshe Rabbeinu had was the Nevuah Ledoros, and didn't need confirmation that came with the Shekhinah Medaberes Bitoch Grono Shel Moshe. Rabbi Shechter would often point out to us that there were fundamental differences between the two styles of Nevuah. When Moshe goes to speak to the people, and he offers them a Nevuah that doesn't have any relevance for the present time, so on the one hand, that Nevuah requires all the signs of a Navi, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu needed to bring and perform the osos, the signs. And on the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu does have a legitimate claim that in that type of a Nevuah, he is a Raus Fasayim, that he has the challenge. On the other hand, at the same point in time, Moshe Rabbeinu turns around and makes a declaration. And what is that declaration? The declaration is that, for what it's worth, when he's teaching Torah, the Inyanim Ledoros, he does not suffer from the same speech impediment. However, when he offers a Nevuah L'shah, he has a right to say, Ein b'nei Yisrael lo shamu, ve'ech yishmeini paro v'ani aral sfasayim. He has a right to declare that he's not the right man fit for the job. Anyway, he meets up with Aaron, and they met at Har Elokim, and he kissed him. And Sforno explains that he kissed him as one who kisses something holy. Aaron kisses Moshe the way one kisses something holy. And so why does the Sforno care if he kissed him with the reverence of a Sefer Kodesh, or as Aaron, the brother, who was missing his brother, long thought to be dead? So the Panovich Rosh Hashiva, Rabachdo Pavarsky, explained that the reason that this was a place of Shechina, that it would be improper to use a place of Shechina for a personal expression. So the only reason to express emotion would be because it is the emotion directed towards Hashem and Kedusha. So that's why the Sforno says that this was a kiss that reflected holiness of reverence. Finally, in the Haftorah that's laid by the Ashkenazim, we note, Vaya bayom ahu yitaka b'shofar gadol, vo avdim eretz ashur v'anidachim eretz Mitzrayim v'shtachu l'Hashem b'har kodesh b'Yerushalayim, that Yishayo HaNavi tells us that on that particular day there will be Ovdim from Ashur and Nidachim from Mitzrayim who come to bow to Hashem in Har HaKodesh in Yerushalayim. And Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin distinguishes between the Ovdim of Ashur, who lose themselves in the anxiety of constantly pursuing wealth, and other worldly gains, so that they never stop to appreciate the Hashem behind the experience of the wealth. The Mitzri, on the other hand, spends all of his time so engrossed in relaxation and Zima that he never pursues anything. Rav Amital Zatzal would explain that both extremes are dangerous for a healthy growth towards Avodas Hashem. One cannot live with total tension, or he will never experience the presence of Hashem. And one cannot live in total tranquility without constant striving for a better relationship with Hashem, if he or she is going to thrive in life as an Oved Hashem. Avodas Hashem requires us to be active, but not so overly active that we don't give time for Avodas Hashem. Shabbat Shalom to all.